Hello, listeners of Channel 88.1 FM, KFHC Ponca Sioux City, and KOIA Storm Lake. I am so tickled that you are taking time out of your busy schedules to listen to Faith in Action. And I am your host for the show, Joanne Fox, and I am so glad that I am able to carry on a conversation with you, and we can both learn from exciting things that are going on in the Diocese of Sioux City, the Diocese of Sioux Falls, and the Archdiocese of Omaha, and anything else related. Well, for listeners who have listened to my show, you know this show is pretty much all about me and my friends, because I just keep bringing my friends on to talk about stuff. And I have my my good buddy here in the studio with me, Father David Esquilano. And Father David is the pastor of Cathedral of the Epiphany, which encompasses the Cathedral, St. Joseph Church, and St. Boniface Church. And we at Siouxland Catholic Radio reside in the former St. Boniface Rectory offices, the historic St. Boniface Rectory offices, to be specific. And so we have a great relationship with the cathedral folks. And the reason I have brought him in is not just because he's a good friend, but also Cathedral has just launched a $1 million capital campaign, and that is to address the needs of the three churches. They're probably the oldest, I think, in the Diocese of Sioux City. And so, but first, we need to get some information out of the way. And there probably are individuals listening right now, Father David, who really don't know you. And so I would like you to share with the listeners a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I'm sure there are a lot of people that do not know me. Even in the parish, I still get people asking me, who are you?
Who are you?
But that's because we're a large parish and we have three priests assigned to the parish. So it's understandable that they don't see me as often as they would do in a parish with just one priest. But as you said, I'm Father David Esquilano. I'm native from Mexico, Southeast Mexico. For people who know a little bit about geography, if you think of Belize, which used to be British Honduras until early 80s, my hometown is right on the border of Belize. Also, I'm sure people have heard of Cancun or been to Cancun. And I'm from the same state where Cancun is. The capital of the state is Chetumal. So that's where I am from. I grew up there, and the fact that I'm here is all an act of God. It's all divine providence. I do not have any family here, so that's not how I got here. It was just, I grew up in a parish where we had an Irish priest, Irish-born, from Dublin. So not like Irish heritage, but actually Irish. It was a missionary, and then we had two pastors in a row, at least, that were from Ireland, missionaries, part of a religious order. And I always identified priesthood with a missionary aspect. So when I started thinking about being a priest, actually, it was first I thought of being a missionary. And I always saw them together. You have to be a priest to be a missionary. You have to be a missionary to be a priest. So when I started thinking more seriously about a vocation to the priesthood, I went to my pastor and I said, I want to be a missionary like you. And he said, no, you will be a diocesan priest. I could not understand that because, in fact, at the time I was growing up, I did not live in a diocese but in a mission territory, which is called a prelature. So I didn't have this idea of diocesan priesthood. We only had one diocesan priest. Everybody else was religious. By now, the things have changed, and we have more diocesan priests there. There has been a growth. In fact, the pastor of the parish where I grew up is a former parishioner, who came from the parish, and now he's a diocesan priest, Father David. And that's another interesting thing from the parish. There have been four vocations to the priesthood. Three of us are David. So David, and then the last one is Joaquin. But at least there have been four vocations. So yeah, so anyhow, I thought of being a missionary. And it was through an invitation from a friend. I had been in a religious order before for a couple of years because I wanted to be a missionary. That was not for me. As my pastor said, you will be a diocesan priest, and he was right. He wasn't right on where it was going to happen, but he was right in that I was going to be a diocesan priest. And a priest, now a priest friend of mine from San Antonio, he was a seminarian at the time, I ran into him randomly at one of his family's events, and he just asked me, would you consider going to the U.S. as a missionary and go back to seminary and be formed there? My first reaction was to say no. I'm a computer engineer as well, and I had just finished my degree. I had very good job prospects, and I was working at a firm doing what I loved, which was writing software. Just we were starting to develop apps in those days for the early cell phones, and the idea of going back to seminary just didn't cross my mind. I was happy doing what I was doing. I enjoyed working with computers. I was just normal life, normal young man life. But he planted the seed, he planted the idea, and that kept growing. I kept thinking about it. The thinking became praying about it. And fast forward, here I am. I approached several dioceses when the invitation came. Some dioceses that my friend knew would probably were probably looking for Hispanic or Mexican priests. And there was Rapid City was the first diocese that said, yes, we'll explore this and send us paperwork. And for listeners, you probably don't know this, but whenever you have been in a seminary before or a religious order, like I was, they have to send a report to the new diocese or order you're going to, which is understandable. You just want to make sure that there was nothing wrong with you, that you were not kicked out, or if you were, why? And that's understandable. Now, this probably will sound bad now that I just had that preface, because when I requested for a report to be sent to Rapid City, they just didn't send it. They would say, yeah, we'll send it right away. And it wouldn't go. And that was the only thing that prevented me from going to Rapid City. As this is going on, I hear back from the then vocations director here in the Sioux City Diocese, Father Brian Hughes, saying, hey, I'm coming to Mexico. We can meet and chat. So we did, and we had a nice conversation. But same thing, send us your paperwork, including that report from the order. I requested a report, and it was sent right away to Sioux City. So it was all the Holy Spirit. I could have ended up in Rapid City, but here I am.
Their loss, our gain.
Well, some people will disagree with you, probably.
Well, possibly. But we'll talk about that later. So you come to Sioux City, you look around, and I mean, you could have said, I don't know if I'm a good fit here, but apparently there seemed to be things going on that you liked, or you felt this would be a good place for me. And what might have those things been in your decision making?
Right. So as part of the process, I came to visit first, and it was Ash Wednesday of 2007. And I still remember it because, again, I mentioned Cancun. So that was our largest international airport nearby, like just like we go to Minneapolis or Omaha here whenever you have a longer flight instead of flying through a smaller airport. It's a similar situation in my hometown. So went to Cancun, went to Mass early in the morning. And again, it's Cancun. You wore flip-flops. That was, I believe, February. You wore flip-flops and shorts because that's what you wear. And went to Mass early in the morning, went to the airport, get here, and it had snowed the day before. So I flew into Omaha and then just started driving over here. And that was the first time I saw snow up close. I had seen snow from a plane or from a car when I had visited England and Italy before. But it was the first time I was so close to snow. And yeah, the weather was completely different, not flip-flop and shorts kind of weather. But what I discovered, even though the weather was very different, people were very welcoming. I still remember I stayed at the cathedral rectory. I didn't know that was that's where I was going to end up being assigned as a priest 10 or whatever years, 16 years later. But the people were very nice, both parishioners, and I met with Bishop Nicholas at the time and other people from the diocese, other people from the parish, and I felt really welcome. So I felt like I could belong here. Remember, for me, being a missionary was important. So it wasn't about, oh, this is the place where I'm not necessarily home, but where I feel the Lord is calling me to be a missionary. That was right after the whole scandal with priests started coming out. So it was clear that there was a need for priests. And it was going to be a challenge. And it seems like I like challenges. So here I am. And so, yeah, it was people who made me feel welcome.
That's great to hear. And of course, I got to know Father David Esquilano, who is now the pastor of the Cathedral Triumvirate here in the city, when I was working at the Catholic Globe newspaper, now the Lumen. And me and my dear friend, Jerry Meninga, the photographer, we did cover the ordination mass and did pictures and video. And I know this probably is kind of tough for you to talk about, but one of the odd things that happened, and odd is not probably the best word, but you're ordained, and a couple of days later, your mom passed away.
Yes, that was sad, and of course, losing a parent is always sad, especially when it's unexpected. And at such young age, she was 56 at the time. But at the same time, there was a lot of grace in that. She wanted to see me ordain a priest. I mentioned I had been in an order, and when I left the order, I know she kept praying for me to listen to the Lord if he was calling me to the priesthood. In fact, this is something I always chuckle when I remember. There was a nice image of Christ in our house that mom loved. And when I left town to go to college and started working somewhere else in central Mexico, so quite a way from home, every time I would come visit, I would find a small, like, passport-size picture, like, just stuck in a corner of that image of Christ. And I'll have to be honest, it drove me crazy because I knew what she was doing. I knew what she was praying for. And I was being a rebel and saying, no, this is not for me. So I would go and pick the picture out and hide it or take it with me. And then I would come back and guess what? Another picture. And it was just ongoing. It was just always there. Yet at the same time, she's probably the reason why I'm here in the sense of her prayers. She was a very holy woman. She prayed several rosaries, probably a couple of rosaries a day. She was volunteering in the parish. She supported financially a few seminarians and religious sisters and religious orders. So she was a saintly woman. And that was perhaps the consolation, that when she passed, I was able to give her the apostolic pardon. I did not have the oils. I was freshly ordained. I had not received the oils. But I was able to give her the apostolic pardon, do the prayers, and offer a mass right after she passed. So within all that sadness of losing her, there was this consolation. Later on, I found out that right after the ordination, she turned to somebody in the parish and told her, well, I can go anytime now.
Oh.
So that also just brought peace, knowing that she perhaps was aware of what was going to happen. She was prepared. So it was sad. Yet at the same time, it was a beautiful thing. And the other thing to consider as a priest, and perhaps here goes a vocation encouragement for mothers out there and fathers out there to kind of poke your children to consider seminary, is because I had just been ordained and my classmates had just been ordained, we did not have parish assignments, so we could offer mass for whatever we wanted, basically. So as soon as the news went out that my mom had passed, I had all of my classmates sending me emails saying, oh, I'm offering masses for your mom. So the amount of masses she received was just beautiful. So again, parents out there, grandparents out there, encourage your kids your young kids to go to seminary. You could have lots of masses being offered for you.
See, there you go. It's a great story. Another great story, and we will get into the capital campaign here in a minute, but as the listeners know, this is my show. It's all about me, and I like to share stories. You'll have to remind me, and I may have told you this story, Father David, is your grandmother, not sure if it was the maternal grandmother or the paternal grandmother, mom's mom or dad's mom?
Mom's.
Mom's mom was at the ordination.
That is correct.
Yes, and she was kind of quiet, you know, but she was always there. And for some reason, she came up to me and put in my hand a rosary and a prayer card and said, for you. And I was so dumbfounded, I said, well, thank you, because I couldn't think of gracias fast enough. And I kind of say that with a Polish accent, because that's my heritage. But that still is in my desk drawer. It was at my desk drawer at the Globe forever. And then I took it home, and it's in my desk drawer at home. And so I think of her with fondness, and I often offer a prayer for her. But I thought that was so lovely. And maybe she knew who I was, that I was actually chronicling your ordination for history. But, you know, you talk about family and the connection and how all of this kind of works together for the to spread the good news of our Lord. And I thought that was such a touching thing. I don't remember if right. I told you that story
or not. And that rosary was made by Mom.
See, there you go.
She, preparing for the ordination, she was, again, she was excited to have a priest in the family. And now, please pray, because there may be two in the family. My nephew, who is in high school, is in seminary. In Mexico, we have seminaries still for kids in high school. So he's a seminarian, my nephew is. So that will be the second one in the family. So keep praying for him, that he is open to whatever God wants him to do, whether priesthood or not. But we need to pray for again, the young people in our families. So going back to the rosary, Mom was excited, and she was planning a mass of Thanksgiving back in my hometown in the parish. And she wanted to have some mementos for people that came. So she learned to make rosaries. So she made rosaries for months. That's all she was making, rosaries. And they were handmade, and the idea was, this is a memento from the ordination. So yeah, so the rosary you received was one she made to be given at the ordination or the first mass. And many people, most people in my hometown, did not receive it at what would be my first mass, but at her funeral. And they were made aware of who made them, so it was very touching as well.
Very much so. So I suppose now we should talk about the Capital Campaign with Father David Esquilano, who's the pastor of Cathedral of the Epiphany Parish. And that includes in Sioux City the cathedral, which is the Bishop's Church, St. Boniface, where we reside in the rectory offices, and then St. Joseph. Three beautiful inner city parishes. Maybe you could tell the listeners a little bit about the history of these three churches. And I guess I should ask you, when you were named, because I can't remember anymore, when you were named pastor, although technically, canon law-wise, because I know you got a canon law degree, you are the rector.
Actually, I'm both.
Oh, both.
I'm rector and pastor. That's something difficult to understand sometimes.
Now,
that happened in 2019.
And one of those come with a greater raise in pay, or?
No, sadly, it's not, no. It is two titles, one salary, and that's it.
Okay.
And no, so I'm both rector and pastor. So for people to understand, most people are familiar with a parish, which is the group of people that usually in a church, but are under the supervision of a pastor or the care of a pastor. So that's a parish, it's the people. So because the cathedral is a parish with all the people in this part of town, downtown, with the three historic churches in downtown, and also for Hispanics and Vietnamese and those who prefer to go to the Mass and the traditional Latin Mass. So I'm the pastor for all these people. Now, because the cathedral itself is a building of special or church special significance, there's also a rector. So in theory, it could be two different people. Most likely, or most of the time, it is not. It's the same person. So I'm rector of the cathedral building, but I'm pastor of the cathedral parish.
Okay, we got that taken care of. So can you tell the listeners a little bit about the history of these three parishes?
Right. So these are the, especially the cathedral, that was the first, one of the first churches here in town. Not the building itself, but the parish, mm-hmm. because there were two churches before we got to what we have now as the cathedral. And it just started, I was reading a little bit of history not too long ago, and I'm really bad with numbers. History was never, I love history, but I don't like dates. I love more like the history, the story. So I may be wrong in dates and names and times, but it was interesting reading a little bit of history of the parish, because when it started, it was just the Catholic Church.
Right.
There was no title. It was just the Catholic Church. And in fact, the building still exists, the first one that was built. Mm-hmm. And it is not too far from here. It is in the west side of the city, so not too far from where we are right now. And it was a small building. It was built by the Irish. Even though the French came first, it was the Irish that came and said, we need a church. And they all pitched in. For what I remember, they all gave $1 each. And I remember reading the story because it was interesting, the way it was written, and that's something that we're working on hopefully releasing a book with the history of the parish that was written, has been in work for a couple of years or a little longer than that. And the author of the book wrote that all gave in with the exception of one man who did not have enough change.
Oh, dear.
We are glad that they didn't say the name, because that would probably be a bad reputation.
Yeah.
Oh, you are the son of, or the grandson of. So it was people's desire to have a church, which is important for us, because it wasn't that the bishop came and said, build a church, or said, here's the money. It was the people said, we need a church. We want a church. And they came up with the money, and they bought the plot, and they built that first church. That church became insufficient at some point, and they built a second one. And then when we got to the third one, which is where we have the cathedral now, it was actually the school that they built first.
Right.
Because they realized that education was very important. And they used the attic of that school building for masses. Again, because the most important thing was to have education for children. And as part of that, mass was offered. And even the current church that we have as the cathedral, when it was built, first they used the hall for masses.
Okay.
Because they could not afford finishing the church. They started, but they realized, well, this would be expensive. So they use the social hall now, the Epiphany Center, below the cathedral, what would be the basement, to celebrate mass. And it was from that cathedral, from that church that used to be St. Mary's until it was renamed Cathedral of the Epiphany by our first bishop, that the churches in the city came from. Because at some point, they started recognizing, well, this is not enough. So that's where St. Boniface came from. That's where St. Joseph's came from. And other churches that are not in existence anymore. But the first one, and in some way, we call the cathedral the mother church because of its significance in the diocese. But in our case specifically, it is really the mother church historically, not just theologically. But that was the first church, and that's where people, other churches, started coming from.
Sure. And so because we've got three churches that have been around for a long time, and because I'm not real good with dates either anymore in my old age. I am reading from the story that my good friend Don Prosser did for the Lumen about the Capitol campaign, and the cathedral was built in 1904. I do remember the renovation in 1994. And St. Joseph, which is part of the parish, that opened in 1909. And St. Boniface, which again is very dear to us because this is where we broadcast out of, is the rectory offices, dedicated in 1911. So we've got churches here that are old and need some TLC. So I think, there was also some work done about 25 years ago to the cathedral. And then St. Boniface had some stuff done too. I kind of remember that. There was some nice gold plating done on the altar and stuff, because I had friends who were parishioners here. And then, of course, there was that fire in 2009 at St. Joe, and there was a lot of, what are we going to do? Because that was serious. And so they did. They fixed everything. But again, that was some time ago. So what kind of went into the decision-making of we better do something now rather than let's do it next year or 2 years from now we're going to do it? Or certainly we couldn't have done it during COVID because we didn't have any interaction with anybody. So how did this come about? Did your parish council make the suggestion, or did you say, hey folks, we got to do something here? Because as a priest and you're celebrating mass at the parishes, you see right up close and personal what's going on. So tell the listeners a little bit about what went into the decision-making of the Capitol campaign.
So yeah, so it is correct that our buildings need some TLC. And yeah, there has been some work done throughout the years, as you mentioned, St. Joe's because of the fire and Boniface, just regular. And also after the council, there was a lot of work, after Second Vatican Council, there was a lot of work done in the churches. And so it's it's been a while, because even the council was 60 years ago.
At least.
So yeah, so it's been a while. So it wasn't just one single person who came up with the idea. There were just conversations from finance council, from the diocese as well, some suggestions on what we need to do. We have this. All these three churches are beautiful, but because of the historic value, it's expensive to maintain. So people are very generous. People in the parish are very, very generous. We have a second collection every month for the upkeep of our buildings, and people are very generous. But it is not enough. Not because people don't give, but because everything is expensive. Changing a boiler in these buildings is very expensive. So all those things. So there was a suggestion of how can we make sure that we have enough to do some improvements now, but also to have some savings for the future. And that's part of what we're trying to do with the campaign. Not all the money will be spent right away. We have some that will be saved for the future. So it was different people coming together, and eventually the Finance Council decided to move forward. Why now? This year, we're celebrating 25 years since the rededication of the cathedral.
Okay.
And that's a very significant event for us. Monsignor Edgars did a beautiful job, and not only the beauty of the place, the cathedral, but also bringing people together for this effort. And following his example, we want to do the same. Now, not just for the cathedral, but for the cathedral parish, which encompasses all these three beautiful buildings. I will have to say, and my priest, my brother priest here in town may disagree with me, but they're wrong, of course.
Of course.
Is that I have the three most beautiful churches in the city, in the parish. I'm responsible for the three most beautiful churches in the city. And I'm not saying the other churches are not beautiful, but historically speaking, these are the three most beautiful churches in the building because of their age, because when they were built and all the work that went into them. So this is a good time to do it. And our parish is growing. We hear about parishes just dying in some other places. Our parish is growing. We keep seeing our attendance at Sunday Mass growing. Just as a factoid here, 55% of the people that go to Mass in the city do it at our parish. Again, that's four parishes in the city.
Yes.
Yet 55% of the people that go to Mass in the city do it at our parish. And our masses, some of them are standing room only. Our noon mass is always standing room only. That's in Spanish. The 10:30 mass at St. Boniface in Spanish for the last couple months has become standing room only. So our masses keep growing. People are coming to mass, and the parish is growing. So we need to make sure we have good buildings for all these people that are making cathedral their home.
And that's a testament to I think the good stuff that's going on at these three church buildings, that people see the need to attend Mass and they look around and they become concerned because they think, well, gosh, you know, we want this to continue into the future. And I think you hit the nail right on the head, Father David, is that the craftsmanship that went into these three churches is almost beyond comprehension. And that was very important at the turn of the century. And that's fine. And I'm a member of another parish here in Sioux City. So, but I tend to agree with you. The beauty of these three churches is just wonderful. But again, they are getting older. And, you know, when a boiler goes, a boiler goes.
Correct.
And that is no small change, no chump change there. So when, again, you sat around with your parish council and whoever to talk about, you know, we're going to kick this off. And how did you come up with the $1 million figure rather than maybe a $2 million figure or a $5 million figure? You know, kind of what went into that decision making?
Right. So because some of these projects were already in our minds before we decided the campaign, we already had numbers of what it would take to change a boiler here or change some doors at the cathedral in the cathedral hall, which is also happening right now, or replace the floor or work on the floor, more than replace, work on the floor at St. Joseph's, different projects that we have in all three locations, or repave our parking lots at all three locations, which is part of this campaign. We already had the numbers for this project. So we went with that number and added more for savings. And we wanted to set a goal that was attainable. We could have set a higher goal, and I can guarantee you it would have been great. And we're still hoping we'll get more than what we set for our goal. It's a goal. It's not just the maximum we can raise. That's just the minimum that we want to raise.
Okay.
So that's how we set the amount. It was something that could be attainable. In the end, our parish, and there is pride in this, is that we're still a blue-collar parish. Several parishes have changed over time because economy has changed. But our parish is still the parish it used to be 100 years ago. It's still a blue-collar parish. It's still an immigrant parish.
Yes.
And generally speaking, newcomers don't have the same financial opportunities that other people have. And I'm not saying that as a bad thing, but on the contrary, that's a great thing, because just like over 100 years ago, the new Irish immigrants realized we need all to give what we can to build a church. That's what we want to encourage people to think about today. This is our home. We left our parish home back in Ireland, or in this case, back in Guatemala, back in Mexico, we have people from different nationalities. So how can we make this our home? It's already built. We just need to improve it.
And I think most listeners would agree, as homeowners perhaps, that this is the way you plan. You know, once you buy a house, then you look to the future. I mean, you may move after maybe 5 years, but a lot of times you're in for 20 or 30 years. And so things are going to happen in your home. And so you have to plan and budget. And I think that's just the same as the church. The difference with these three churches, and especially Cathedral, is, and you mentioned that, is the mother church. And it is what we call the church of the bishop. I mean, that's where the ordinations typically are. That's where the important rites are of the church. And so it is the bishop's church. So we've talked a lot about the makeup of the three churches here, Cathedral, St. Joe, St. Boniface. I wondered if some of the thought going into the campaign was to also reach out to the Diocese of Sioux City, and because it is the mother church, and a lot of times, like Bishop just had his fifth grade mass, and all these kids came in, and of course, that's always a lot of fun. And so there are things that are bringing in, the Chrism Mass, you know, brings in people. So how are you kind of approaching that in addition to talking to your own parishioners about this campaign?
Right. So, of course, we need all the help that we can get, not just from the parish. And the other thing is that, yeah, it's the mother church. Most of the priests that we have in service now were probably ordained at the cathedral. I say most because there was some time in the diocese where ordinations were happening in their home parish. So it's not all of them, but I would say the majority have been ordained at the cathedral. So it's in some way, yeah, the parish that belongs to all of us. We'll have a connection with the cathedral somehow, either because I received First Communion from the priest that was ordained there. We'll have a connection to the cathedral, the fifth grade mass. Mm-hmm. We have kids coming from all over the diocese, all of the schools in our diocese. Bishop Healing High School comes to mass once a week. So there are people who are not parishioners in the canonical sense. That means they don't live there, or they are not part of any of these language groups that are assigned to the cathedral, but have a connection. So yes, we are trying to encourage everybody from outside of the parish, and we have approached some people that in the past have given towards the cathedral, even if they are not parishioners. But we're also respectful of the needs in other parishes and want to be respectful of that and not come and take givers from or donors from other parishes, because we all need all the help we can get. But yeah, recognizing that especially the cathedral is a church for all of us. We all have a connection to it. Is that we are approaching former donors to the cathedral or similar campaigns.
When you talk about we, is it do you have like a core group of individuals who are doing this?
Right. So we, when I say we, is Finance Council. We the Finance Council in the parish, and it's a multi-ethnic council. So that's something I'm proud of, because that's what the parish is like. And we are also, we have also contracted with Impress, which is owned by a good friend of the cathedral, good Catholic, Susan O'Brien, and she has been a good advisor for us and a good contact person. So that's our team.
Okay. So what is your time frame on this then? It was announced on Divine Mercy Sunday that you were going to do this, and you know, it's been publicized, and I'm in on emails of this. But what's your time frame for?
So it's a 3-year campaign.
Okay.
So we're encouraging people to pledge for 3 years, and that's why I believe it's attainable. $1 million. That's about $300,000 every year for 3 years. So it's attainable, and we started working on this last year. So it's been in the works for a while, and it wasn't until early this year that we started approaching some people before it became public. Divine Mercy Sunday, that's when we announced it to the parish. And now we're just encouraging people to come and make their pledges. We have a match or a grant from the diocese. When we raised $90,000, the bishop will give $90,000, so we're excited about it. That has encouraged some people and saying, we want to see the bishop also sign a check.
Absolutely. Don't leave any money on the table.
So that's our time frame.
Okay. Now, if a listener is intrigued with all of this and has fond memories of Cathedral or St. Joe or St. Boniface, and they say to themselves, I think I would be interested in perhaps supporting the campaign, how would you suggest they go about doing this?
So there are two options. We live in an e-life. Everything is online. Everything is with technology. There are people who don't want to interact with somebody else. They just want to go to the computer and give. We encourage that as well. So if you go to our website, sccathedral.org/campaign, that has more information and also a way to give online. Or just go to our website, sccathedral.org, and you will see a link there on the front page to the campaign. If you want to visit with any of us, you can call the office, and Carla Cramper, who is our director of operations, is a contact person for the campaign. She has more information than I do. And we're also priests. We're also available if you ever want to visit with us about that. We may not have the information, but we'll refer you to the right person for it.
And we have not mentioned what the name of the campaign is. And that is Preserving Our Faith.
That is correct.
Which makes sense. Now, And this is a big thing, too. I think a lot of baby boomers listen to this show. I wish younger people would as well. But let's face it, my demographic's a little bit older. And as we age, a lot of us have IRAs or some investments or something like that. And that might be something that an individual might be interested because you can donate part of that directly to a nonprofit. I mean, sometimes you take it out because you got problems with your furnace at your house. But that might be something to bring to the attention of the listeners. Perhaps their financial planners or their lawyer or their banker could direct them in case they are motivated and say to themselves, this might be something I'd like to support. They could go that route as well, I imagine.
Yes, they may. And also we understand this is a farming economy. So we also receive grain. So any donation will be received. You just want to make sure you let us know it is towards the campaign.
Sure.
And we want to be respectful of the desires of the donor, intention of the donor. So just let us know it is for the campaign. But yeah, there are several ways in which you can give.
Yep. And we used to joke when we did our pledge drives here that if somebody was so motivated and wanted to donate a cow, we would be happy to take that cow. However, it would be good to take it to the processing plant first, and we didn't really want them bringing that calf into the offices. But yeah, if you've got some livestock and you think to yourself, you know what, I could make a few dollars off this, and this would be a good place to donate it. So kind of wrapping everything up, again, we kind of know now if you are computer savvy, which Father David is because he comes out of a computer background, you can go to the website, sccathedral.org, and, you know, then have some fun with it. Click
exactly.
Around and look at who
it will be right there, front page. Campaign, Preserving a Faith.
So you can go that route, or you can call to the cathedral offices, and I'm going to ask you to give that phone number. It's a 712 number, listeners.
255-1637.
255-1637. Carla will answer it, or I think they...
Her extension is 104.
104.
So if nobody answers, just dial 104, and she will call you back.
Yep, she will. She is Johnny on the spot. So there's many different ways. I know that if you're going to cathedral itself to Mass, a lot of people go at noon, a lot of people. They have brochures in the back, and some people are tactile and they like to touch stuff, so that's fine too. So everything is out there. Listeners, if you want to support this Preserving Our Faith campaign, it is a $1 million campaign for the Cathedral of the Epiphany Parish, which includes the three churches, Cathedral of the Epiphany itself, St. Boniface Church, and St. Joseph Church, and those are all in Sioux City. So that kind of brings us to a wrap on the show. I want to thank my guest in the studio, Father David Esquilano, who I have known since, I think, even before the ordination, but certainly from the ordination. It's been a real treat to have you in here, and thank you so much for sharing with the listeners this exciting news. It's part of the Cathedral Parish.
Well, thank you for allowing me to share this good news with your listeners. We're excited. This is a great time in our parish and in our church. So thank you. Thank you very much.
And before we step away, Father, I'm going to ask you to give a blessing for us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
May Almighty God bless you, the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you, listeners, for taking time out of your busy schedules to listen to this show. And on behalf of my executive producer here, Ann Reed, and myself, I want to remind you, a faithful reaction is good, but faith in action is so much better. Thanks for listening, and God bless.